Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. My guests are Hamil Harris, reporter with the Afro-American newspaper, and Simone Pathay. She is a political reporter with the Roll Call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're still going to take some phone calls about Jim Vance or whatever it is that you want to talk about as it relates to some of the top stories of the week, but I want to switch gears. If you're on the line, please stay with as we will pick you up in just a moment. But I do want to kind of switch gears just a little bit. There have been some really big doings when it comes to the Trump administration as well as what's going on Capitol Hill. Let's back up just a little bit and talk about Sean Spicer. He's gone. And, you know, probably one of the things a lot of people are thinking about, Simone, is what are they going to do on Saturday Night Live now without Sean Spicer? Anthony Scaramucci, no communications experience, Wall Street financier hired as the communications director. A good thing or bad thing for the Trump administration? Good thing or bad thing for the press?
Well, I think we could all rest assured that Saturday Night Live will find someone else to play him.
Yeah, I think so.
And keep us all entertained for the next 6 months. You know, the press conference he gave on, was it just Friday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very smooth. He was had a strong delivery. A lot of people remarked about even the gestures he had, and his phraseology was very reminiscent of President Trump himself. It was almost as if he'd been an understudy studying the main character here, who he is supposed to represent. Now, depending on your perspective, that's either a really great thing in a communications director, or maybe it's not so good a thing. I mean, if you subscribe to the mentality that your team, your core team, should be a team of rivals and giving constant feedback and contrasting opinions, then maybe you don't want to have a yes man at your podium.
But I loved it, though. You know why? First of all, I remember the hat quote. He said, you know, Donald, if you're watching right now, I apologize again for calling you a hack. It's just like, it was like entertainment. And then he told everybody, okay, I love him. I really love him. I really love this man. Okay, I'm going to call on everybody. It's like he became the press secretary. And poor Sarah Huckabee, it's like she had nowhere to go but down because this guy was entertainment. So again, he's his own personality, which may work against him. I don't know.
But the thing he said today in the press conference when we were talking about the leaks is he said he's going to fire everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, tongue in cheek, or is that a reality?
Who knows? It's hard to say. Yeah, I think, certainly we don't know the particulars of Spicer's departure, but we know that he didn't want Scaramucci coming on. He had some definitive hesitations about him taking over the communications strategy. Again, as you alluded to, he was someone who had been critical of Trump as a candidate in the past, so that seems like somewhat of a surprising decision. But I think it remains to be seen how much of a clearing of the House there will be.
And to the point about, you know, Sean Spicer, there were reports that when this happened, he was absolutely furious. But how furious could he have really been when there has been so much discussion over the past 2 months or so about his days being numbered? So was it about him possibly losing his job, or was it specifically about Anthony Scaramucci?
That's a good question. I think it probably was more specific to the individual who, you know, came in that he had some reservations about. Of course, being in the public eye like that and the way that Spicer was humiliated every Saturday, somewhat you might get used to talk about your imminent departure. But this was a big deal for Spicer. I mean, he's been a big-time Republican communicator in this town for a long time and fairly well-respected and well-regarded on Capitol Hill. Suddenly assumes the job for President Trump, and he becomes literally a punching bag.
But all bets off now. Donald Trump and the tweeter, his tweets, that's the spokesman for the country. Number two, when you just think about Spicer, he was kind of tight, where Trump is not tight. And you think about, this is like Gracie Mansion. I think I'm in New York, you know, the tight collars, people talking about each other. You know, bring Ed Couch back. I mean, you know, it just seemed like Trump now, look at the Jeff Sessions piece. That would never go through any other president. The spokesperson would try to spin that. Trump's getting telling the Wall Street Journal that he's upset with Sessions and he just said all these things.
And the New York Times.
And the New York Times.
Yeah, and to that point, as we, you know, talk about Jeff Sessions, is this deja vu all over again? Now we are hearing just today, President Trump talking during this press conference about how disappointed he has been, being very vocal, not just tweeting, but being very vocal about it, whether he is trying to push Jeff Sessions out or get Jeff Sessions to, resign, on his own. This is just amazing political drama to me, because it's also been discussed that if Sessions goes, then Bob Mueller could be next.
It's like we're watching The Apprentice. You know, it's like every night, is he going to fire him? Is he not going to fire him? And I still think this is just TV. This is just TV, and Trump knows how to dominate. I thought that CNN stopped covering other news. This is like, what's done? And you can't help yourself. You want to, well, what did he do today? What's going on? It's like we are addicted to a show. Unfortunately, it's the United States of America.
But with that said, it seems that so far, just about every high-profile person, whether it's Sean Spicer, who is now out, the Attorney General, who seems to be walking a bit of a tightrope, James Comey, and so many others, if you are affiliated with this administration, you do so at your own risk.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, that goes back to something we just alluded to, is that we have a president who's communicating in ways directly with the public that we've really never seen before. Yet it's not like he's going through advisors or through a communications director to set his policy. I mean, he doesn't even know what his policy is. He's just tweeting whatever comes up at the top of his head.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. I want to go back to Bebe. I know you want to talk about Jim Vance. Go right ahead, Bebe. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I simply want to say that I'm a long-time D.C. resident. I met Jim Vance about 30 years ago on Pennsylvania Avenue. Stanley Woodruff was performing. And I remember walking up to Jim's table, and I said, Jim, I didn't know that was you. And he laughed, and he replied, and I didn't know that was you either.
Had a great sense of humor, certainly.
Yeah, he certainly did. And I am so heartbroken. I watched him almost every single night. And when I heard the news that he was sick, he was going to take off, for medical reasons, it's like, oh, God, please just bless him.
Yeah.
I was touched by him in so many ways, and I simply wanted to express that. And I thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, BB. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Eric calling from Calvert County. Eric, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you doing? Yes, I'd like to say Jim Vance was a very good man. And I remember seeing him on TV at Channel 11 News at 11 o'clock. My parents used to watch him all the time. They just really loved him. He was a very good icon, and he's a very good legend. And my heart and sympathy goes out to the family members, to Jim Vance, and wish you Godspeed.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate that, Eric, and thank you so much for your phone call. Go right ahead.
I still want to call it Mr. Vance, but, you think about back to the day before there was cable, before there was like 800 channels in your TV, you had the big four or whatever, and people would go to NBC for the evening news when folks had family meals, and you always wanted to know, what would Vance say about the Redskins? What is he going to say when they lost another game? And he always found a way to kind of have himself as, in addition to telling the news. And I think that's what people, we grew up with Vance.
Yeah, we did.
As a young reporter, you wanted to know, what would he say about this?
Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that we've lost him now, because I do remember as a really, really young child that even locally he covered, the politics. He did cover Watergate, from a local perspective. He did, cover Marion Barry. He covered, the issues, even though he wasn't necessarily on the street at this point, he was still anchoring, but he did provide an interesting perspective. And back to the politics piece, because I don't want to forget that. The other thing that I wanted to say to Simone was, when we're talking about all of the people that have come through, so far, 6 months in to the Trump administration. I think about, you know, Rod Rosenstein, who prior to becoming, you know, becoming deputy attorney general, he had this impeccable career, this incredible reputation of you know, political corruption in Maryland, and then to be embroiled in this political whirlpool. I can't imagine, you know, just from a career perspective, I can only imagine him hitting his forehead and saying, "Oy vey, you know, what is going on here?" You
know. Yeah, I mean, everyone does things for different reasons, so you can't presume to know what was in his head. I think a lot of people maybe joined the administration because they thought they had the ability to steer the ship in some way or to bring some sort of course correction. And for all we know, maybe that's where Scaramucci's head is, too. I don't know. It's hard to say.
But, you know, connect in advance to Rosenstein. You can do this. D.C. is a family of families. And I remember, like today, Rod Rosenstein was speaking at the NAACP convention.
Really?
Yeah, he was up there. It's like people know him. I mean, how many times I would walk up to him when he was in Maryland, like, come on, give me something to work with.
So what did he say? Because that's interesting to hear, because as we know, President Trump declined the invitation from the NAACP. But for Rosenstein to speak there, what was he talking about?
I didn't actually hear the speech because I was in the press area, okay. But he did address the whole convention. And it's interesting, while Trump did not go, the Maryland Republican Party went out of the way to be available to have opportunities. And Rosenstein is the kind of guy who would talk to people. And again, Maryland is very unique in terms of Republicans. And, you know, Michael Steele, you know, Ehrlich, and even, you know, Larry Hogan. So they're trying to kind of make the national politics kind of, you know, bring it down a few notches. But again, it goes to the heart of family. Remember when Bill Clinton was president, you know, he would send a message to Vance, so he would be available. You know, it's a way this town works, and it's about relationships. That's why I think it's interesting that when you look at what's happening to Jeff Sessions, yes, Sessions is from Alabama. Yes, he's a senator, but he's been around this town a long time.
And he has had and still does have, even if they are not necessarily on the Hill happy about what, you know, what's happening with the Russia investigation and recusal and the like, but he still, you know, has relationships with senators on the Hill.
Oh, sure. He has a number of allies. And what's really making this so interesting is there is a competitive Senate primary in Alabama right now. You know, Luther Strange will have to be up for reelection, and you've got a congressman and several other folks in the state who are challenging him for the GOP nomination for Senate to hold on to Sessions' old seat. And the race has really turned into a loyalty contest to President Trump. So I think the interesting question will be, will Strange, will Congressman Mo Brooks, who is also vying for the nomination, are they going to side with Sessions over this and stay with the Alabama GOP, or are they going to side with Trump if this comes down
and
to
it? You really do have a split within the Republican Party, like, you know, the old Republicans versus the Tea Party Republicans and the Trumpites. It's like, it's all over the place. It's amazing.
Right, and I do want to talk about this one piece, and I want you to speak to this after the break, Simone, because as we saw with this health care vote, you have, you know, the president, some would argue, you know, attempting to bully some senators into voting. But, you know, who are these senators beholden to? Are they beholden to the folks that put them in office, or are they beholden to the president? We'll talk about that on the other side. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a bit.
It's Donald.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week with Emil Harris, reporter with the Afro-American newspaper, and Simone Pathé. She is a political reporter with The Roll Call. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Procedural vote on the Hill today, Simone, and really, really big deal. It's the repeal and replace, we're going to talk about it vote. But John McCain stole the show.
He did. Yeah. So the big news late last night was that McCain was actually going to fly back from Arizona after being diagnosed with very serious brain cancer so that he could be here today on the Senate floor to vote. And of course, the Senate is considering other things, one of which is a defense authorization package, which he has had his hands in for a long time. Some would argue that was probably more important to him than this health care vote. And there was some speculation on which way he would vote today, given that he has been a strong proponent of returning the Senate to so-called regular order, which I think many senators on both sides would say that the institution has gotten away from. But yes, it took him a little bit longer to get to the chamber. He entered, pretty much got a standing ovation as soon as he arrived, was shaking hands with senators from both parties, obviously a figure who commands tremendous respect with the institution, and then, yes, cast that vote to proceed to the debate on the health care bill.
The interesting thing was the speech afterwards. He was allowed 15 minutes to speak. And John McCain, always known as very fiery, the imagery of him with this brain surgery scar across his left eye, above his left eye. And you know, as we know, John McCain's history, served in Vietnam, shot down a fighter pilot, spent, 5 or 6 years at a POW camp. And to see him stand there and urge his colleagues to find a way for to reduce the gridlock, I think that's probably going to be one of the lasting images for John McCain.
I mean, I think we finally see some leadership, you know, in this country that we had been missing. I mean, you think about the decorum of the Senate. For years, I covered the Senate, the House, and I would just hang out there just to walk around with McCain's and the, you know, Fred Tate, you know, and Strom Thurmond kind of people to figure out what do these people think? You know, who are these folks? But again, the institution is still bigger than the individual. He came back to cast a vote because that was his duty. So you saw duty, and you also, it tells you a lot about the relationship between Mitch McConnell and McCain, and the old guard still, even though they may disagree with the president privately, you know, but they still stand together for the institution, and that was really honorable.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that specific thing. One of the things that came out today about disagreeing with the president privately, the Susan Collins hot mic comment that just came out, and she was talking to a Democrat, and unfortunately the name escapes me at the moment. If I can find it, I'll definitely mention it. But in this hot mic comment, they were, you know, talking about the president not talking about health care or the budget, and it was, you know, said that the president was crazy and he's kind of out of control. And one of the things that we have seen a lot of is that it seems to me that even supporters of the president, Congress or Senate, when they're on TV, they go right up to the edge of criticism and then they back off. But this piece with Susan Collins is fascinating because it is raw. It is honest, you know.
Yeah, and Susan Collins is certainly a very particular figure within the Republican Party. She's probably the most moderate Republican in Congress today. She represents Maine, of course, along with Olympia Snow. They were known as the two moderate Senate Republicans for a long time. And she doesn't have a lot to lose here. I mean, there's some question whether she will stay in the Senate or whether she will run for governor eventually of Maine in 2018. But electorally, she doesn't have a lot to lose. She doesn't have as much to lose as, say, you know, Dean Heller from Nevada, who's gotten it from all sides about which way he's going to vote on this health care bill. So Collins and her fellow female Republican Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. Those mm-hmm. were the two no votes.
Yeah.
But one thing we must remember, Donald Trump still represents this blue-collar kind of Rust Belt. You know, he's one of my guys. And the thing that a lot of people voted for Trump for was because of this elitist kind of George, you know, Daddy Bush mentality that we know more than you, we're smarter. And, you know, Trump just comes off just, hey, I'm just want to be loved, you know. And so, again, the very institution that they uphold is the reason why there were, 9 or 10 Republican candidates, many from the Senate, you know, let's forget Marco Rubio, they did not win mm-hmm. because they were full of pomp and circumstance. So, again, the question is, how does this play with just Joe, you know, the guy, you know, sitting in that truck, you know, whatever.
And let me make sure I clarify. She was actually talking to Senator Jack Reed from Rhode Island. They were talking about Representative Blake Farenthold, who's a Republican in Texas. And what she said, among other things, was that she called him fat and unattractive.
Right. He had challenged her to a duel.
Yes.
For voting.
Yeah, exactly. And the senator said that you would beat the blank out of him which I just think is just funny because it looked just like the Civil War. Capitol Hill is still it's still rough. It's still very, very a very rough and tumble place. Also, CNN is reporting that this case out of Minnesota, the woman who was killed by the police officer. Russick, Justine, and I hope I have the name pronounced correctly, Justine Russick, the one who was killed, the woman from Australia who was killed. CNN is now reporting that the noise that the officers heard that startled them before she was shot was a slap of the hand, of her hand, on the police car. Before she was shot. I mean, this coming out just two hours old. And I'm sure this investigation is going to continue to unfold. But I think the thing that's really interesting about this is that, you know, during the course of this year, we've had, you know, these so-called Black Lives Matter killings of, you know, police officers killing, you know, young black men, you know, white officers and the like, not just the past year, but the past several years. But how now with the killing of this woman, the African-American community in Minneapolis, and even more broadly, those pundits that talk about Black Lives Matter have come to stand with the family of this woman who was killed by police officers. And I just think that the dynamic there is just very, very fascinating to me. Is this an all lives matter kind of situation, Hamil?
Well, I think again, it goes back to Rosenstein in Baltimore. We have a time in our country where people wonder, do I matter? You know, blacks, you know, other people. And again, at the same time, you have some people who fear. They fear what they don't know. And so, again, I think this is the big question mark right now, is that who speaks for me? Is my child safe? How does my government protect me? Let's don't forget the Dreamers, the Dream Act. You know, the whole investigation about the people.
But hold on, let's not get far afield.
Okay, but
I want to stay with this piece, and this is why I bring that up. The police chief resigned. Okay. When, although the Philando Castile thing did not happen in Minneapolis proper, right. We did not see any resignation of any police chiefs. But the police chief in Minneapolis has resigned. There's been a call for the mayor to resign. She says she's not going to resign. And this whole situation could be a poster child for police reform, at least in Minneapolis.
Well, truly, everybody's talking about criminal justice reform. But the question is, where does the reform start and what does it look like? Again, it's clear that we have a society that's filled and consumed with fear, and some people that have the fear wear a badge. And again, some will say, hey, you know, it's one-on-one, you know, and I'm scared. I want to go home at night. But somebody said, well, I want my child to come home at night, like Trayvon Martin, you know, Skittles. I do think there's a discussion to be held. And it's interesting with this whole piece with Sessions. There are a lot of Democrats were hoping that Sessions would get the boot. All of a sudden, they say, well, maybe Sessions is stronger because he's against Trump. And imagine a Rosenstein being the attorney general.
Yeah, but again, back to this, I don't want to, like I said, I want to stick with this point. And I'll ask Simone, because this is an international incident now, because the woman was from Australia, is the color of her skin also the thing that could bring this police reform in Minneapolis, or even more broadly, is that the thing that could really, really put this back on the map?
Sure, to the extent that the rest of the country is able to relate in perhaps a way that they weren't before, to be able to see that violence and abuse of authority can impact anyone, and it doesn't matter who you are. Maybe it's a higher visibility case in that sense.
And I think that, and unfortunately, like I said, we've had so many of these police shootings over the past year. As a matter of fact, just a few numbers here. Just last year, and this is according to the Washington Post, 963 were killed in all of 2016. So far, we have 554 people killed.
Is that a race? And let's just go there.
Just go there.
The bottom line is that, unfortunately, you have a disproportionate amount of African Americans still being killed. And what happens is that when the other society gets killed, all of a sudden, I heard a lawmaker say that today in Indiana. People, oh my goodness, you know, she was Australian.
Right.
What happened? You know, in other words, you know, they deserved it. Again, we still have a lot of ignorance promulgated by racism in the same nasty gumbo.
But with that said, again, the Black Lives Matter movement is standing with her family.
And
I think that could be a dynamic that really continues to keep this discussion high on the minds of lawmakers and community. I want to thank both of you for sharing with me today. Not